From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome back to Postcard from Pop Red. Hang on, we're out of the Hacienda.
Hey, gringo.
La la la, la 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 la. That'll do. Oh dear. If you can't laugh at yourself, lad. Anyway, it went pop.
Yeah, the world went pop and we missed it, Mark, who was supposed to be copy-tasting last week and didn't bother to put it up. We missed the world, the international bubble wrap day.
Yes.
Right.
Well, he said, well, no, just in fact, if we'd have done it, if we'd have known, we could have done it. We could have wrapped ourselves up in bubble wrap, naked, and rolled on the floor and heard each other going pop.
Right.
It's a family show, I think, actually.
Yeah, well, no, but I tell you, no, it's a funny thing. I actually believe that people who do things like this, it's not done very often now, that they celebrate some of the most bizarre things in the world just for a laugh, and bubble wrap's one of them, and yet it's a mammoth.
Well, actually, talking of doing strange things for the right reasons, there was, now, who was it? Terry Wogan introduced it. It was done in the very conservative with a small C County Sligo.
Yeah.
And in if you've been in Ireland a lot, you would appreciate this, that Ireland is still very much a Catholic-style country. It's very conservative. You know, you don't see girls walking around flashing their body parts. And to actually go to a beach and run into the sea naked is like a sin almost, because that's Ireland. But they actually do it every year there now for breast cancer.
Yeah.
And that was, it was Sir Terry Wogan who announced that on, I think it was Weekend with Wogan or something. Can't remember exact facts. But there's lots of silly things that people can do, go, and they've used this bubble wrap. What was the charity they used it for, Lee?
Well, I know, but they were actually celebrating the 100th anniversary of the invention of bubble wrap.
Yeah.
And it was, yes.
And there was
well, what do you think? It's a manufactured sealed air, isn't it, who do it? They employ 17,000 people, and it's a market that's worth over $4 billion. I thought it was worth more than that.
Somebody has to blow up all those bubbles.
And then squeeze them.
Yeah. And then squeeze them.
It's like having a teenage child, isn't it? Yeah. As they talk to you or smile, everybody goes...
What do you mean? A Mars a day helps you work, rest and zit. I know, that's the one.
The thing is, if you think, though, we all like a womanly woman, we like a girly girl, but we don't like a boily boy.
No. I can go with that. Oh, my word. No, I'm sure, RTI, I can't help anybody, but we'll give it a go.
Yeah, I just think it's something. We have enough contacts in the army. There's enough people, you know, in the forces who listen to us. Let's see if we can find this bloke. It's not a new story. I'm sure people probably will have heard about it. But do you know it, Mark? This bloke who phoned up from Afghanistan, soldier, squaddy, told about all the trouble he was having, the pain of seeing his fellow soldiers killed, and his hopes for the future. And then he said, on the message, because he didn't get through to his girlfriend, he had to leave a message for her. He said, very simply, I love you so much. I love you with all my heart. And I was going to ask you, don't answer. Obviously, you can't answer, but will you marry me? Now, that was over a month ago. Mm. And he's not had a reply. And there's one reason he's not had a reply is because the poor bloke dialed the wrong number.
Oh, no.
So he's proposed to the wrong woman.
Uh-oh.
Now, so now he might be, now, quite seriously, I know it's funny, obviously he's got fun, I'm sure he'll laugh eventually, but he's out fighting for his life and for our lives and for our way of life, and he probably thinks, he won't know he's dialed the wrong number, he probably thinks that his girlfriend isn't bothered.
But he would do by now. He'd know.
He might not.
He will now.
The romance out of it.
He will know now, I promise you.
Yeah, I promise you. Now that you've broken the story, Lee, I think that he's definitely going to know now.
Well, let's go and find.
Hang on,
that's in the app.
I'm just about to talk to I'm actually live on the radio at the moment, Major Retired Terry. Can we get a message to Afghanistan, do you reckon?
Tell them I'll lend him a pigeon.
What? Okay, right. I'll tell you what, hot off the presses, thank you very much. I'll call you back in about 20 minutes, sir. Bless your cotton socks, and I'll give the answer out to the listeners. You are a gentleman. Cheers. There you go, boys and girls. That was not a setup. That's genuine.
Really?
That was genuine. It's a colleague of mine who's a retired major in the Army. He's a colleague of mine. Somebody from British Forces Broadcasting Service that we know of is going out to Afghanistan next week, and we'll take the message out there. There you go, fixed.
Brilliant. Absolutely.
How's
incredible.
About that? That I promise
that's the
you.
Power of RTI.
I promise you, hand on heart, that was not a setup, and I wasn't. I know why Terry's calling me, but it was nothing to do with that. Isn't that amazing?
From the centre of Europe to Afghanistan.
So that message will go to Afghanistan early next week with BFBS. Simple.
Brilliant.
Okay, there you go.
Do.
Get on with
sorted.
It. Sorted.
Right.
Sorted. Next. Oh, I love this one. Next.
What's that?
Next.
What, silent phone calls?
No, next is the satellite thing.
Oh, right.
Whose list are you using? Oh, it is, sorry.
This, boys and girls, is the professional...
Well, I mean, what it's about, isn't it, is that, I mean, Europe's meant to be a single market, and we're meant to benefit from competition and so forth, and then suddenly we find that there's a load of rules in place which basically allow suppliers of services, or even of goods sometimes, to, and let me say, in sort of intellectual property law, they call it to fragment the market.
Correct.
So they can make sure that, for instance, the Brits pay more or less than people in Spain, more or less than people in France, so that actually the people on the ground don't really get the benefit of the single market.
Can we just can we put some clarity into this? Because otherwise it's probably making no sense at the moment.
It makes no sense to me anyway, because it's about football.
Well, no.
So what happens here then is that a pub lady from Portsmouth, she wanted to show, I think, sports television, Premier League matches in her pub to please her clients and to get in an extra client. But she found, in fact, that getting a decoder from what country? What was it? From some other country.
She got it works from Nova, so that would be Greece.
Right, yeah. So she used a Greek decoder, which allowed her to pay Greek rates for getting the sports television in, instead of having to pay the UK rates, which were much more expensive.
Yeah. Yep.
And she was sued. In fact, I think she was prosecuted.
She was found guilty. £8,000 or something. Yeah.
And found £8,000. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the matter has been taken up to Europe's top court, I'm very pleased to say. And Europe basically said that it's not competitive. This is not in keeping with the spirit of the single European community and the single market, and they've overcome the rule. And so what it means now is that there is once again more move to greater competition within the European Union, because they're not allowed to segment or fragment to separate the markets.
Yeah. Well, this is really going to hit the football clubs, isn't it?
It will do, because at the moment they're charging per country deals, and what they're going to have to do is come up with some kind of pan-European thing. I mean, for example, we worked on a piece last year which involved Manchester United, and to get some film for the programme that was shown here in Slovakia, we went through a sports agency in Prague to get the footage that was required and copyright clearances. Now, what this lady's done, and I can tell you, do you know, this has been going on for over 10 years, this kind of case. In fact, no, longer, 15 years.
What, this particular case?
Cases like this have been for 15 years like this, and it started as soon as the high-powered satellites came in, whereby, like I do, and I've commented earlier, I was watching, you know, Egyptian television, direct from Egypt this morning at home. If I want to, I can watch Chinese television, Japanese television. I can certainly watch NHK Tokyo, and various other international channels from all over the world on my satellite dish. And whereas the sports holders, who often happen to be in Germany as it goes, they're trying to push the prices of everything up. And the technology is making it easier to bring the price down, and you just go, well, hang on a minute, mate, I'm in Europe. European law says that. You sod off. And I'm sorry, somebody's got to start realising that, and that goes for the whole of Europe. You can't muck about.
Well, it has. It's been a brilliant time for the football clubs, if, you know, for over the last... Well, when did they actually do these deals? About 10 years ago, wasn't it? Like you
well,
said.
It was when Sky Sports was the one that really kicked it in.
Yeah, that's right. And apart from anything else, it's helped to make these clubs so incredibly rich.
Really? Since when?
What? Since we've been getting all the deals through...
You know, how are they able to pay 70? Who just got a £70 million transfer fee or something? I don't follow sport very much, but I mean, I see a lot of money.
No,
going
but there's a lot of money flushing around. But if you look at it, most of it's all debt equity.
It's too technical.
Oh, I don't know. Let's move on.
All right, Chelsea. If it wasn't for the fact that Mr. Abramovich pumps shed loads of money into it all the time, it would be broke.
Right, well, that's it. That's the last time I try and say anything intelligent about football. Look,
if you look at most of the major clubs, they're into the banks for millions. Millions and millions.
Debt equity, like you said, But then why, if they are so badly in debt, why do they pay, like Mark just said, £70 million to buy somebody in? Why do they pay everybody so much? Why don't, you know... Why do soccer stars earn so much if they've got
agents?
Agents. Yeah, exactly. So people are getting rich. Maybe it's not the clubs themselves that are getting rich, but if they've got that much debt equity, believe me, somebody's doing very well out of
it. I'm sure they are. Yeah. Anyway, but this lady's taken on the big boys, and apparently she's won.
It looks very much like she's won, and she's won for the population. She's not won for herself. This hasn't been a battle for herself particularly. No. This has been a battle for the people.
Yeah. Well, hats off to anybody who takes on big boys anywhere and wins. Good for them.
Good for them.
That's
quite
a terrible thing to say. Hats off to anybody who takes on big boys.
Well, stop twisting everything, you monkey.
It said it!
Stop it. Behave yourself. £2 million is the cost to silent phone call firms.
Yes.
I can imagine. All three of us, when we saw this, went, yes! Yeah,
I did.
The big boys misbehaving again, isn't it? Mm? Yeah. Sorry, Lee.
No, I was going to let you make your point, and then I have a point to make about it, because I don't quite agree with this, actually. I don't agree with it 100%. Well, let's put it this way, right? This is a prime example. About 10:30 this morning, I got a telephone call and picked the phone up. Bloke said to me, hello, and he's quite posh, said, hello, is that the house owner? And I just said, very politely, who's calling? And he said to me, is that the house owner? Right. And I said, what's it going to do with you? And so he got annoyed and hung up on me, which I think is nice when a call centre does that. It doesn't come out of shape. I think it's nice when I annoy a call centre so much they hang up on me. What my point is that if that had been a silent phone call, I'd have picked it up, said, hello, nothing's there. I'd have put it down, got on with my day. Wouldn't have been upset, wouldn't have been bothered.
Well, that's where you're wrong, Lee, because within about probably another 5 or 10 minutes, it would have phoned back again and again and again and again and maybe 20, 30, 40 times a day.
But the silent phone calls don't hurt you. It's the where they actually con you out of your money or make you buy something you don't particularly want to or give away your personal secrets. Right. They're the ones that should be monitored and they're the ones that you should be fined for.
Completely disagree. Imagine that you're having your day disrupted 20, 30, 40, 50 times a day by silent phone calls, but you have to keep on answering because you're not certain that it actually, this is the one where your granny's phoning in or somebody's phoning in or your kids are phoning in to let them know where you are. And yet, you know,
one after 1471, you can always find out who's called you and phone them.
No, unfortunately, most of them withhold their numbers.
Yes.
Yeah, but then it's not your grandmother.
Well, you don't because
you've got to phone 1471 50 times a day.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole thing's outrageous. And what happens is that these companies simply put your number into a computer and the computer dials. Okay,
I agree with you. It's outrageous, but the silent ones are not actually doing you any harm, and it's very rare. Believe me, I've had so much trouble with call centres, as Eric knows, and we've discussed this on the show. Mm. Not many people are getting 20, 30, 40 silent phone calls a day. You might get two or three generally, and that is going to do you no harm. It's the people selling
the stuff. I've got to stop you there, because if technology gets it wrong, and this is what happens, when you've got some technology on a dialer that goes wrong, and you can watch this, when Eric was on BBC One television, when there was a problem with skyboxes that dialed over and over and over and over because the technology wasn't talking to each other properly. That's when you get a huge amount of silent calls. And that is...
But what I'm saying is that doesn't happen to everybody all the time.
But it happens to lots of people.
You have a sufficient number of people.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. I agree with you. I agree with you entirely on the basis that we should do something about silent phone calls. But what I'm saying is also you should do something about the arrogant people at the call centres who phone you up and demand to know about your life.
Oh, well, that's absolutely true as well. I mean, I have to say, I find it, I so resent so much being telephoned by people, and the first thing they say is, can you do an identity check, please? What's your mother's maiden name? What the hell is going on? You say, you do an identity check. You tell me, what's the password? And they say, well, what do you mean password? Well, I say, well, I want to know the password. And eventually, of course, they're completely stumped.
No,
I
mean, there's an easy way out. The whole thing, when somebody starts with that, say, sorry, mate, I've just moved in, it's rented property, and I'll be moving in again in 2 months.
Yes. Oh, you could do something.
And they'll just put the phone down.
I did to one yesterday is that I told him his call was important to me and that I was going to put him on hold for a second, and I left him there for an hour.
Yeah, well, actually, I think that's a very good tactic, and I tend to do that. A lot of these people, and I'm sorry because, you know, these are the little people who are trying to earn their livings, but they're working for the big boys, and unfortunately, most of them are on targets, and they've got to get so many calls in per hour. So I think you're quite right, Lee. The thing to do is just say, hang on a minute, I'll go and find the person you need to speak to, and then you just leave it.
Leave them. Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's so we do agree, even though you're set about me.
No. You can't... If you've got one line into a small... If you've got one line into a small business, and you've got people, you know, self-employed person, could be a working journalist, could be, there he is, he has to leave the phone line busy for an hour just to get rid of some tow rag who's phoned him up.
They'll be gone within 5 minutes, but it frustrates them.
But also, in this incredibly high-tech world, we all have different forms of communicating with each other. This isn't like the back in the 50s where if you had a telephone and you left it off the hook, you were cut off from the world. There's plenty of things you can do. Whatever they do, whatever they'll do, and I agree with Mark, these poor people who are trying to make a living, but I've actually said to them, don't you think morally you should actually go and get a job doing something else? And that's quite right.
I like that. Let's let him rant on a bit more. As the world food prices hit the highest ever, we're on...
you missed out the Daily Mail.
Yeah, we don't. I can't be bothered to go into the Daily Whinge.
I'm here now.
The Daily Moan a lot.
You need your Daily Mail, dear.
This year, right. The whinging about the Pope... Which drives me nuts.
Yeah, the whinging about the Pope drives you nuts?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I think about the Pope.
Well, the point is that there are some things you should do and some things you shouldn't. Yes. One of the things you should do where you've got a huge populace in Great Britain that happens to be Catholic and it happens to be the biggest lot is you welcome with open arms that head of thingy, which happens to be the Pope.
That's right.
All right? And it's the same as when, I don't know, some other geezer comes across that fits into that country. Where I get the ump is when you get these other oiks who claim to be representing somebody when they clearly don't, and then end up going into prison in England, which is one of the reasons why I hate the bloody country, because that's the waste of money. But I see no problem with the Pope visiting all those people who were so happy to see him.
I don't see any problem.
So what was the whinge about?
Well, if you think, the Pope's dynasty is probably the richest in the world. Yeah. And we nicked to bring him over here food out of the mouths of the starving to the tune of £1.85 million. We took it over the took it out of the overseas aid budget pay for the Pope to come across.
No, it wasn't at all. We robbed we robbed Peter to pay Paul. That was what happened.
I think Lee's absolutely right. If the Catholics want to go along and bring the Pope over, then they can, but it's at their expense. And really, for suddenly, and of course, they only found out by accident that apparently of his total bill for bringing him over, £1.85 million, which was paid by the taxpayer, was actually taken from a budget which was designated for overseas aid. And that's just incredible. I mean, that's a piece of false accounting.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with that. That is wrong. Absolutely.
It's absolutely wrong. Yes. Well, the whole idea that non-Catholic taxpayers should get involved in bringing this man over is completely outrageous as well. And as you started off by saying, they're incredibly rich. They're incredibly rich. And they have the money. They have all the money to go about. And they're not even a proper state. They're not a sort of political entity. You know, it's a piece of nonsense. You know, I wonder if we would pay the same amount, actually, for instance, for the chief mullah or the chief whatever it is, you know, of the Islamic world to come over. There would be a storm.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing is, and this to me in a way is quite as telling as the fact that the Pope should have paid for it himself, is also the fact that the Foreign Office, right, who had this budget, said it doesn't really matter because it only came out of the running costs, not out of the money we give to... Well, if you take the carburetor out of your car, it won't run properly, will it? Yeah. That's exactly the same thing. They took money out of the running costs, so the thing won't work. £2 million?
It was robbing Peter to pay Paul. That's what I was saying in the first place.
It was a good joke the first time.
Yeah, exactly. moving along, this is a bit of a problem. Cyberbullying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Go on, then. I'm looking for
it. No, after you. Oh, no. We're all going to be very gracious and polite to each other.
We're not going to be all British, are we?
I agree. I think this is terrible. If you think... But this, if you think what this site is set up for, obviously the people who set it up, the little
gossips... Should we tell people what it's about?
While you were talking over
Oh, sorry.
No, you didn't. I didn't understand that at all.
What, the Little Gossips website?
That's better.
Right, there's a website called Little Gossip, which apparently is set up specifically so that young people, and we're talking about pretty young people, 13 years old and less, who are allowed to get on and to actually to talk anonymously about other people that they know and to refer to them by name.
Yeah, that's the worst part of it. This is anonymous attacks.
Shouldn't be allowed.
No, absolutely, and that's the problem with the perceived anonymity that the internet gives you. You know, you can go out as some sort, even if it's only as a bully, you can go out and cause trouble under the anonymity that this internet age gives you. It's like that, like the call centres who phone up and you can't phone them back to complain or say, don't phone me again, I don't want you, because everybody's got anonymity except the people who are potential victims, which is like me and you.
I'm not sure I quite go with that.
Go on then, argue with me. I missed you.
Well, you know, if it's all right for journalists to have this anonymity rule,
no, don't do that one.
Why?
What anonymity have journalists got? Well, the name of a journalist in the newspaper above the story he's written.
No. The anonymity bit comes in with I can't disclose my source.
That is to protect. Again, that is to protect, because, ultimately, if you get taken to court, there's a lot of journalists who've gone to jail to protect their sources of information, and that is so that there is a freedom of it. That's part of the freedom of information. It's not anything to do with it. It's tried and tested. It's a legal thing. It's everything's gone on for centuries. You can't pick on that. You know, that everything that you talk about like this is actually damaging, not saying just because you said it is, but the attitude, the posture you take is ultimately damaging to freedom of speech, and that is why we have little tips about it.
Okay, we got two more subjects to squeeze in very quickly. First one is the citizens' advice cuts could be devastating, warns the chief. That's Gillian Guy, the CAB chief executive. Cuts could amount to as much as 45% of our funding. What happens then?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes. Yeah, well, I think yes, I mean, I'm sorry, this does fall naturally towards me, if you like, was from the Consumer Action Group. But, you know, I think you have to read this cuts thing here and the fact that the Citizens Advice Bureau, which is a very important organisation nationally for helping very ordinary people, they're being undermined because apparently they're likely to suffer, as we hear here, up to 45% reduction in their funding. Mm. Add to that the announcements just before Christmas that the government is cutting up to 200 quangos, including the OFT, including Consumer Focus, including Consumer Direct. And the government said it's not a problem, it's going to reduce costs, it's going to increase accountability, and the workload, a great part of the workload, will go to the Citizens Advice Bureau. And now we get 2 months later, we find, in fact, that the Citizens Advice Bureau, which is going to have to deal with all this extra work, is having their budget cut, but maybe by as much as 45%. It's colossal. What an amazing scandal. How can the government justify it? What on earth are people going to do? Well, they're going to come to the Consumer Action Group, I hope. But, you know, it really means that people are just being cast out. And do I hear the rubbing of hands? Yes, I do. The banking industry are delighted. Yeah, yeah. The finance industry, the retail industry, anybody, the big boys, they're all loving it because it's fantastic, because more and more the little people who really have a very, very bad deal from them so often are going to be even less protected. What an extraordinary...
There is a thing there. In principle, I agree with Mark entirely, except that there is a thing in Britain where you can go and get 15, 20 minutes of free advice off a solicitor, and that's what I do whenever I need it. I go to a solicitor and you get free help, which is far better than the CAB could have done anyway.
Well, there is that to it. We've got to go, boys and girls, but I've got to squeeze this silly little thing in. It's official.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
It's official. Bob Dylan is... Yeah. At number one for the worst lyrics ever.
Yeah, have you heard? It's actually totally unfair because this song is actually a nursery rhyme. They've taken it out of a nursery rhyme that he wrote, but I'll do it for you. It goes, wiggle, wiggle, wiggle like a gypsy queen. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle all dressed in green. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle till the moon is blue. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle till the moon sees you.
It's the worst song lyric ever. Ever.
Brilliant, Bob. It's not as bad as some of the others. Well, what about Desiree?
We haven't got time for that because we've got to go, boys and girls. That was Postcard from Bob Brad. Thanks to Mark and Lee. Say goodnight, girls.
Bye-bye,
goodnight, girls.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.